Okay. We now change away from education to policing and criminal justice. Our first speaker of this second segment is David Sklansky. He will be discussing defunding the police and community-based policing. He is a professor of Stanford Law School and a co-director of Stanford's Criminal Justice Center. David, please go ahead.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm going to talk about the tension between current calls to defund the police and the older ideal of community policing, an ideal that was widely embraced by police reformers in the 1980s and 1990s, but that many activists now spurn as a dead end. Despite this tension, there's a significant and overlooked area of overlap between community policing and police defunding, and I'm going to argue that this area of overlap should and probably will be at the center of efforts over the next several years to address chronic problems of racism and violence in policing. Different people who call for defunding the police describe what they want in different ways, but few, if any, of them are asking for police departments to disappear tomorrow. They want more investment in alternative, non-punitive approaches to community safety, and they want to slash police budgets and the number of police officers, not just or even primarily to save money, but because they argue the key to reducing police violence is reducing public contact with the police. Like police defunding today, community policing in its heyday could be hard to pin down. Sometimes it seemed more of a slogan than a program. But the core idea was that the police shouldn't see themselves as an elite force of professionals separate from the public. Instead, they should work hand in hand with the public to provide community safety. The key strategies were consultation, trust building, and partnership. And almost by definition, this meant more, not less, contact between the police and the public. So there is a real and fundamental tension between the agenda of community policing and the agenda of police defunding. Defunders want to reduce contacts between the police and the public. Community police advocates wanted to increase those contacts. But the kind of contacts that advocates of community policing wanted to increase between the police and the public were not the kinds of contacts that police defunders are most concerned about reducing. When today's activists talk about the need to reduce contacts between the police and the public, they focus first and foremost on the kinds of interactions that so often spiral into violence, particularly when the police are confronting Asian Americans, Latinos, and Native Americans. And when defunders give examples of the kinds of functions that could be better addressed by agencies other than the police, they talk most often about school discipline, about traffic enforcement, about calls to diffuse low-level arguments, and about responding to people in mental distress. At its core, community policing was never about increasing any of those kinds of contacts. In fact, many advocates of community policing talked about the need for police to stop chasing 911 calls because that took them away from the kinds of interactions that could build genuine partnerships. And a big part of community policing was precisely the idea that the police should share responsibility for public safety with a range of other agencies. Now, it's true that police defunders don't just want to shift school discipline, mental health response, and traffic enforcement away from law enforcement agencies. They tend to think police departments as a whole are irredeemably wrongheaded, inherently committed to a punitive, militaristic, domineering approach to community safety. Community policing in this view could never be more than window dressing. And there are reasonable people who hold this view. But I think they're wrong. Polls show that most Americans, including most Black Americans, like most of the respondents to Larry's poll, don't support reducing police spending or reducing the number of police officers. Researchers consistently report that residents of poor minority neighborhoods want less police abuse, but also want more of the right kind of policing. They want the kind of protection that suburban police departments and private security patrols give to affluent white communities. And they're not deluded. The weight of the evidence suggests that community policing at its best really did change the culture of police departments, or at least many officers. And it really did reduce crime and make people feel safer, including residents of poor minority neighborhoods. Unfortunately, there isn't much evidence of whether community policing reduced police violence because, to its great discredit, the community policing movement was never really focused on the issue of police violence. It's painful to recall, in fact, how widely neglected that issue was until the last decade when Black Lives Matter put it back on the national agenda. But if we therefore lack solid evidence that community policing can reduce police violence, we have even less reason to believe that cutting police budgets or reducing the number of police officers will do that. A dozen years ago, when the Great Recession forced cities like Vallejo, California, to slash their police budgets and shrink their police forces, the result usually was an increase, not a decrease, in police violence. Overworked, underpaid officers are more likely to be violent, and departments strapped for resources tend to abandon efforts at community policing. The examples we have of cities that have reduced police violence while also reducing crime, cities like Camden, New Jersey, often have increased, not decreased, spending on law enforcement. When Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was asked what a world with defunded police would look like, she said it would look the way that affluent white suburbs look today. But affluent white suburbs often spend more on policing and have more officers per capita than the larger and poorer cities that they neighbor. What we need is not a return to community policing as it was pursued in the 1980s and 1990s, and not a slashing of police budgets and police staffing, but a new consensus for police transformation, drawing on both community policing and on police defunding and operating at their intersection. And I believe that consensus is beginning to emerge. I look forward to the question and answer.